Thanks so much for sharing your afternoon with us here on Kauai Community Radio. I'm Jonathan Jay, and we'll be doing Out of the Box for the next 2 hours till 6. Coming up after that will be Evolve with Dove. And I've been off island for about a month, so I'm sure a lot of things have happened. I was in Chicago. I was in Montana. I was hunting elk. I was in Seattle. I shoveled snow. I raked leaves, all kinds of amazing things you can do in a place with seasons. But it's so great to be back home where the air is thick and warm. And wow, coming up here this afternoon, looking at the waves and the ocean and all the people strolling around with not so much clothes on because you don't need them, because it's so much nicer than when it's 20 degrees. But it's so beautiful here, and it's so tranquil and so lovely. It's hard to believe that it's not this way everywhere else in the world. We're going to be talking with Representative Tulsi Gabbard, Congresswoman from the 2nd District here in Hawaii, in her second term in office. She's come out recently with some fairly provocative statements, quite courageous, in that she's bucking some of the leadership in the Democratic National Committee, calling for more debates for the presidential Democratic debates. And then also she's come out against the Obama administration with their security policy and their escalating conflict in Syria. So that's happening. But at the same time, there's so many wonderful things happening here. There have been recent judgments in the courts here, Hawaii Supreme Courts, about the TMT and the errors that the Bureau of Land and Natural Resources made in their policy, their failure to meet their responsibilities to protect the aina, the watersheds, and the cultural rights of Native Hawaiian practitioners. Also, there's been news in the Na'i Aupuni. Those elections have been shut down, pending a review. But, you know, all politics is local. And so I would really like to hear what you guys have done for this past month of November. What meetings are coming up in the community that you're engaged in? What are the issues here? What is what's happening in your family? I know there's been birthdays and holidays, and so thanks so much for joining us today on December 10th, 2015, as we come to the end of the year. It's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful thing. There's some troubles going on in the world, but if we act with conviction and clarity, we can make some good moves and avoid tragedy. And doesn't that sound like a good idea? Be right back after some music.
This is KKCR Hanalei and KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. This is Out of the Box, Closet Free Radio, an answer to the New World Order.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. So, KKCR, your community radio station, and Out of the Box, we don't give you the left or the right. We give you what's left out of the conversation. And in the last few weeks, there's been quite a serious escalation of conflict in and around Syria. Perhaps you're aware of that recently Turkish NATO jets shot down a Russian fighter pilot bomber, and this is allegedly over the skies of Syria or Turkey. It's not exactly clear, somewhere on the border. But this is the first time that you've had direct NATO conflict with Russians since 1952 in the height of the Cold War. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who's going to be speaking about why she feels that the CIA and the U.S. Secretary of Defense must stop the illegal and counterproductive war to overthrow the Assad regime and focus on fighting ISIS. Representative Tulsi Gabbard is part of the DNC vice chair. She's on the Armed Service Committee as a Democrat. She's a second-term congresswoman from the 2nd District of Hawaii, first elected in 2012 and 2014. She's served two deployments overseas in Iraq as a and a veteran in the medical corps. And then she served also in Kuwait as an MP in 2008. She's now a major in the Hawaiian National Guard. She has a very, very busy day, but I was able to speak with Erica Tsuji and she, her media contact, and she was very gracious and did a wonderful job in finding a place in the Congresswoman's schedule to meet with us today. So we're going to be talking with her in a few moments. It's about 9:15 in Washington, D.C., but it's 4:15 here in the islands, and I want to thank you for tuning in and joining us this afternoon. So much to talk about at the international level and at the local level. KIUC, the local utility cooperative, is going to be having their elections next year in January and coming up on deadlines to file for that. So lots of things going on. Quick music break. I think we've got a phone coming in, and we'll see what comes next on Out of the Box on Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. Well, we've got Tulsi Gabbard on line one. I'm going to bring her up right now. Aloha, Congresswoman, can you hear me?
Aloha, I can hear you fine.
Well, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day. I understand your mornings start around 6 and you go till 10 every day.
Yeah, it's a long day. It's a good one, though.
Well, and, you know, you're very, very busy doing things. I was listening to Erica Tsuji try and explain your schedule to me, and it's, I guess you're at a party this evening.
Well, this is our end of year staff get together, and we've also got a couple of birthdays. So, it's nice to be able to get everybody out of the office. We're at someone's house, and just to be able to say thanks for all of the hard work that they do, to make sure that we're representing Hawaii here in Washington.
Well, if it's not the continuing resolution that you're trying to get straightened out, or the Armed Services Committee, or the National Guard, or the Maui Family Social Services, or the Credit Caucus, or the refugee crisis, or meeting with the Defense Minister of India, I'm glad that you could find some time to get with us on the phone here today with Kauai Community Radio.
Thanks for the invitation. It's good to talk with you.
Well, I'm very excited to speak with you. I've listened with great attention to some of the statements you've made in the media recently. I think you've taken some very courageous positions in bucking some of the leadership. You were calling last month for additional Democratic debates for the Democratic presidential debate. And now,
yes.
And which I really commend you on, and I think that's a very principled position.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because as we're about to go into, you know, next week, we've got a couple of debates, one on both sides, for the country to view and to listen to. You know, the calls continue, and I continue to get letters and messages and tweets and other things, just from folks who are interested in more engagement, more openness in the process, and really looking for the democratic values that we need in order to make sure our democracy is strong, to make it so that our presidential candidate, people who are asking us to hire them as our commander-in-chief, are not punished, which is the current policy, is that they get punished if they were to go out and participate in a debate, let's say if you wanted to host one, or if an organization wanted to host one and they went and it was an unsanctioned debate by the DNC, they would be punished by not being allowed to participate in the other DNC debate. This is the first time that the Democratic National Committee has put this kind of policy in place, and I just think it goes against some pretty core Democratic values, and it doesn't help strengthen the engagement of our electorate.
Well, it seems like it's counterproductive to the democratic process, and it denies our citizens the ability to find out what our potential leaders think and feel and what their positions are. It seems like you could never have enough debate. There's never could be too much democracy.
And that's exactly right. I feel strongly the same way, and especially as we're dealing with so many important issues that are facing us here at home, domestic issues, as well as issues of war and peace. Overseas and the United States' role in our future and where these candidates stand on these critical issues that are going to be pivotal for us and whoever our next commander-in-chief is.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because another issue that I really wanted to discuss in some depth with you today is the Obama administration's position and their stated objectives in Syria, which you, again, have taken a courageous position in, and you are calling for a new direction in Syria.
Yeah, and this is something that, the wars that the United States is waging in Syria right now are not often clearly talked about or defined. So, the reality is that the United States is waging two wars in Syria. The first war is the war against ISIS and these other Islamic extremist groups like Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, and there are many, many other groups there. And this is a war that Congress authorized after 9/11. Just a few days after 9/11, Congress passed an authorization to use military force against Al-Qaeda and its affiliate groups, and they go by many different names. The second war is the war to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad, which is illegal and counterproductive. Congress has not authorized this war, and it's counterproductive because it actually helps ISIS and these other Islamic extremist groups achieve their goal. It helps them achieve their objective, which is to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad so that they can take control of all of Syria, which will exacerbate the humanitarian crisis and the human suffering in the region in ways that we have not seen, and it would create an even greater threat for these groups to the region and to the world. They would gain far more sophisticated military capabilities within Syria that they would be able to use against us, against the West, against our friends and allies, and they would continue to grow in the territory that they control. And the list goes on and on. The consequences of this are very serious, and why I'm pushing strongly. I've introduced legislation that would defund the CIA program, which is arming, equipping, and funding these different Islamic extremist groups in their effort to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad. And it's why I'm strongly advocating for us to work with other countries, work with France, work with Russia, work with these other countries to focus on defeating this threat that exists for all of us, this threat of ISIS.
Well, it's curious because ISIS wants to overthrow the Assad regime as well, and so one might be tempted to ask, why is the Obama administration collaborating with ISIS?
That's exactly the question and the concern that I'm raising, and it is a very simple and disturbing question that unfortunately not enough people are asking and really holding them accountable and providing an answer to this question. The reality is that if the administration succeeds in that objective to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad, it will open the door wide open for ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and these other groups to take over all of Syria.
Yeah, well, it seems very curious, because the idea of regime change to address terrorism, it seems like a continuation of the Bush era efforts, and we've all seen what a terrific mess that has made. And it's also very curious that the Obama administration is explicitly calling for regime change, ousting the Assad regime, when in Riyadh today an agreement was made that that would not be a precondition for peace talks, and that that the diplomatic solution is a necessary part of how do we get out of the mess that we're in. It's also very alarming that along the Syrian and Turkish border 2 weeks ago, NATO jets by Turkey actually fired on and shot down a Russian fighter pilot. So things like this haven't happened since 1952 during the height of the Cold War. What are your concerns about increased escalation and conflict with Russia?
Well, first of all, to your first point, I think it's important that we do learn from the past mistakes that were made in Iraq, with the ousting and the regime change and the ensuing nation-building mission in Iraq that has failed, and in Libya with the overthrow of Gaddafi. In both of these situations, I think perhaps people had good intentions, but the end result was that ISIS and Al-Qaeda and these groups have gotten stronger. There has been more chaos and human suffering that has been created. And I think that there's no question that that would be the same outcome here in Syria. You bring up the potential head-to-head conflict with Russia. You know, the fact that that Turkish plane was shot down is one thing, but the fact that
did you say that a Turkish plane was shot down?
I'm sorry, I misspoke. The Russian plane that was
okay.
shot down.
All right, I thought that might be a new development, but this is the Russian plane that the Turks shut down.
That's correct. And now we have, you know, Russia has put in place very sophisticated anti-aircraft missile defense systems, and the United States now has our U.S. F-15s patrolling the Turkey-Syria border. So when you look at the fact that the United States and Russia have completely opposing objectives in this situation, with the United States pushing for the overthrow of the Syrian government of Assad, and Russia essentially seeing that, hey, they would like to see Assad stay in place so that there is that stability, and so you don't have ISIS coming in and taking over that country. For Russia, it's an existential threat. They've got thousands of Chechenian foreign fighters who are fighting alongside ISIL, and they don't want to see that threat being brought home to them.
And it's curious because the U.S. is in a position there where they're intervening unilaterally in a sovereign nation in total contravention to international law, whereas the Russians there are at the request of Assad.
Right. Right. And there's a consequence that again, I've raised in an Armed Services Committee, and I've raised with the administration and continuing to raise with other members of Congress for the potential, whether it be an intentional shooting down of a plane, whether it's U.S. shooting down Russia, Russia shooting down the U.S., or an accident. If they, you know, if the Russian planes or their anti-aircraft missile defense mistake one of our planes for a Turkish plane, for example, and they decide that they want to take that plane down, that could trigger what could be the devastating impacts of another world war or a nuclear impact, because you've got the U.S. and Russia, two countries that are literally just a trigger away from releasing a nuclear bomb.
And it seems like if everyone can basically agree that a terrorist organization like ISIS should be contained and eliminated, then what is Russia and the U.S. fighting about?
Well, again, this all goes back to the effort to overthrow Assad. That is the point of contention and the point of disagreement between our two countries, and why it's so important for us to take our resources, stop the war to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad, and focus our resources working with others, working with the Kurdish Peshmerga and the Kurds in Syria who are fighting on the ground, other ground partners to fight against ISIS, and working with other countries and focusing on defeating this enemy. John Kerry, Secretary Kerry, just a few days ago said ISIS could be defeated within just a few months if the civil war were over. So I agree with him and his assessment. let's end the civil war by stopping our waging war, that war, against the Syrian government of Assad, and focus on defeating this enemy that is threatening and terrorizing the West and the civilized world.
Well, you seem to have a fairly clear understanding of the situation there and how U.S. policy could be different. I'm wondering what is in your life experience, in your political and your military career, that has led you to have a very different understanding of what the U.S. security forces are asserting and that you describe as an illegal and counterproductive war?
Continue to serve in the Hawaii Army National Guard. I've deployed a couple of times to the Middle East, but I believe that if something is worth knowing, it's worth knowing well. And when we're dealing with these issues of war and peace, these are critical and important issues that are worth knowing about. You know, I've seen firsthand the incredibly high cost of war. And so when I look at these issues of war and peace and you know, when and where we commit our men and women in uniform, putting their lives on the line, when and where we commit our treasury, our taxpayer dollars, these are things that I take seriously. So, you know, I dive deep into these subjects. I do a lot of reading. I do my homework and talk to a lot of people and as such have come to these conclusions.
Well,
I think there's two things I'll just add to that.
Sure.
That I think are important for leaders in our country to apply. And the first is when you actually care about the situation, when you care about our country, when you care about our men and women in uniform, and you care about the direction of our future, and you apply that care into the work that we do, and then secondly, you apply common sense, it's not so difficult to be able to understand what's really happening and to then have the courage and the leadership to stand up and fight to do what's right.
What would you like to see the Obama administration message to Turkey as a NATO country to try and de-escalate the situation? And what kind of what do you see as concrete steps that can be taken to move forward to come to some sort of rapprochement with Russia and get a rational policy in place in the region?
Well, the first thing that I would ask you and ask your listeners is to call, write, email, text, tweet members of Congress and ask them to sign on to my bill so that we can build support around this effort to actually pass legislation to defund this illegal counterproductive war to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad. The United States should take a strong leadership role in rallying countries from around the world towards focusing our efforts, our resources, on defeating ISIS and Al-Qaeda and these other Islamic extremist groups. You know, you mentioned Turkey. Turkey has a long history of both directly and indirectly actually helping ISIS.
Yeah,
their open and porous borders.
Yeah, there's been accusations that they are actually making petroleum sales for ISIS.
That's right. And many other things as well. Turkey's interest is, their first interest is not defeating ISIS. They make no secret about that. Their first interest is getting rid of Assad. Their second interest is getting rid of the Kurdish fighters who, by the way, have been our most effective fighters on the ground. And so we as the United States need to exercise leadership in bringing people together to focus on this enemy and to hold those accountable who are actually aiding and abetting our enemy.
What is the bill number that you have proposed to defund the illegal overthrow of Assad?
Well, I encourage people to call my office because I'd like to give them the bill number. I'd like to give them a little bit of background information so that they can mobilize and help build support for this effort.
Yeah, well, that sounds great because I'm not doing radio shows like this just to entertain people. I'm trying to bring concrete, actionable information so that we can participate effectively in our democratic government.
Exactly. I appreciate that. And, and I'm trying to spread the word on this through every platform that I can. And if I could I leave the phone number for
please,
my office?
Please
there?
Do.
The Hawaii office is 808-541-1986. That's 808-541-1986. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we'd love to equip you with some information so that we can join in raising our voices against this illegal counterproductive war and to get our country back on track.
Well, Representative Gabbard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate you finding some time in your schedule. It's a long day, those days in D.C., and it's got to be, it's almost coming up on 10 o'clock there.
It's almost 10 o'clock. I'm keeping my eye on hopefully getting home next week. We should be passing a bill to fund the government for the rest of the fiscal year, so I'm hopeful that that will occur next week. And I will be back home and jumping in the ocean before next weekend. That's the goal.
Well, thank you so much again, and big mahalo and aloha nui loa to you.
Mahalo, Jonathan. Take care. Have a great rest of your day. Aloha.
Aloha. So that was Representative Tulsi Gabbard. Very much appreciate her taking some time to speak with us. The issues going on in the world are important, but there's things going on here as well. We're going to come back in a few moments with a segment about the TMT, the 30-meter telescope, and the revocation, the voiding of the construction permits that the Hawaii State Supreme Court just demanded, and the response of Governor Ige and the Bureau of Land and Natural Resources. It's a lot of things happening out in the world. I'm glad that you've taken some time in your afternoon or your evening today to join us here on Kauai Community Radio. We are the station that loves you, and we love to be here for you and provide this valuable community service. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on Out of the Box on Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. On the line right now, we've got Eric Hansen, who has an update about the Hawaii State Supreme Court. They just released a statement on their ruling, and he's going to go into that. And can you hear me, Eric?
Aloha, Jonathan. You can hear me.
Yeah, loud and clear. Thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate that. So what is the in a nutshell, what did the Hawaii State Supreme Court rule about the permits for the construction of the TMT, the 30-meter telescope?
Well, pretty much what the court had said is that a contested court hearing should have been held before the conservation district use permit, which allows the TMT to build, was granted. And so, therefore, the court had stated that a contested case hearing must be conducted or for other proceedings to be consistent within the court's opinion to have things happen before the TMT could actually be built. So a couple different things have been said. UH had pretty much said that University of Hawaii continues to believe that Mauna Kea is a precious resource where science and culture can synergistically coexist now and into the future, and remains in strong support of the 30-meter telescope, and that UH is currently reviewing the court's decision to best move forward, which is interesting because essentially what happened is, according to the official statement that was published December 2nd, which you can find online by the state Supreme Court, is that the state Supreme Court had to determine, oh my goodness, I have a lot of notes here, whether, okay, so the question that the court had to determine whether the approval process of the permit for building the TMT, whether the approval of the permit before the contested court case was held violated Hawaii's constitutional right of due process.
Yeah, so let me jump in here, because my reading of that was that the Bureau of Land and Natural Resources...
Board of Land and Natural Resources.
Board, thank you. They failed on three counts. The
right.
First is they failed to provide due process. They granted the permit before the case could be contested. And
correct.
That's ridiculous, and it's not their policy. They deviated from the stated policy. And the reason why that policy exists, maybe you can explain why.
Okay, well, so from what the background, which you can read in the state Supreme Court's ruling, is that in 2011, there was a lot of objections from opponents that asked for a delay in action by the Board of Land and Natural Resources to issue a permit until a contested court case hearing could be done.
So just to sort of reiterate what you said, they asked for a permit. Before the permit can be granted, if anyone has an objection, by due process, they have the right to make their objections known and to have that be presented to the board before they grant the permit. But
correct.
That's not what they did.
That's not what they did.
That's not what they did.
And so they didn't do that. But even after they had given the Board of Land and Natural Resources had given the permit to UH to allow for the construction of a 30-meter telescope, the Board of Land and Natural Resources had approved this permit with subject to a number of conditions, including a contested court hearing to be done, and that no construction could be done until the contested court hearing had been resolved. So what we have is, you know, several times already throughout 2015, we have had attempts by the university and the 30-meter telescope corporation to start construction before literally a contested court case hearing had been heard or had been resolved. And this is within the criteria that the Board of Land and Natural Resources had set forth after they had already issued the permit to the university to help facilitate the telescope's building.
Yeah, so, I mean, really that's all just crazy talk, because unless you have a time machine, I don't know how you're supposed to go back in time and review the case to contest it after the telescope's been built. But even more curious than that is repeated assertions by the IGE administration that the telescope had all permits necessary and that they were within their legal rights to proceed.
It doesn't really make sense when you have, you know, all the legal rights to proceed, but the Board of Land and Natural
Resources
said if you're gonna proceed, you gotta have this court hearing, and you also have to have this court hearing contested case hearing be resolved. So
not only did they not allow that, but they also failed on two additional counts, and that was that they have a responsibility to proactively protect the water, the natural resource of the watershed, as well as proactively defending the right of Native Hawaiians to practice their traditional cultural rights and beliefs and practices. So three strikes and you're out. Any one of them would have been...
I will elaborate a little bit above that. So to meet the criteria to get a permit to do any kind of development on top of the mountain on Mauna Kea...
In a conservation zone.
Which is considered a conservation zone, you need to meet 8 criteria. There are 2 criteria that, in my mind, stick out that they automatically do not meet. One is you do not interfere with the natural resources. 2, you do not disrupt the physical environment. So up on the mountain...
Don't break what you can't fix.
Right. So up on a mountain where the proposed site is, it looks like from far away, it's just a bunch of rocks, which, you know, people can say whatever they want about rocks. But if you start looking underneath the rocks, there are these small, little, unique individual communities, which, you know, maybe some of these plants can be found in other parts of the island or in other parts of the mountain. But in the assemblage of where these plants, mosses, lichens, and all that are found, are only found there on the mountain, or only found at that particular spot on the mountain. And regardless of that,
so if I'm trying to just follow what you're saying and try to understand, you're saying that those are unique and fragile ecosystems that exist nowhere else in the world?
Correct. So, and regardless if they had existed other places in the world, the fact of the matter is there is ecosystems up there. There are natural resources. There is a physical environment. When you take a machine and bulldoze and go 5 stories into the ground, you think that you're not going to change the physical environment or alter the natural resources? There is many issues that that the TMT and the issuing of the conservation district use permit were not met, and essentially the court says by voting, and this is quote from the Supreme Court of Hawaii, is by voting on a permit, the conservation district use permit, before a contested case hearing was held by the Board of Land and Natural Resources, it denied applicants the right of due process in a manner that is meaningful, due process in a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner.
The essence of that, if I understand it correctly, is it's not meaningful to have your day in court after the telescope is built.
Right, and it doesn't even make sense when the Board of Land and Natural Resources says, hey, you're going to get this permit, but before you can do anything, you got to have this contested court hearing, and it has to be resolved.
Well, so, and I frankly, maybe it's just because I'm a simple man, but I don't understand how you can grant somebody something before you review whether you should do it or not. I mean, that's just all backwards.
And that was one of the things, if people
the cart before the horse, yeah,
to some of the hearings over on YouTube and stuff like that, is that the state Supreme Court was saying exactly what you said, is hello, what are you doing, bro? You cannot just do this and then not do what you're supposed to do. What the court had issued is that saying that issuing the permit before the contested case hearing was, quote, improper and was inconsistent with the statutory definition of a contested case as a proceeding in which legal rights, duties, or privileges of specified parties are required by law.
So here's my question on that, because it wasn't like that's the only thing that the state did. Because in addition to putting the cart before the horse, they also tried to create an illegal exclusion zone. They declared an emergency where none existed, and it was explicitly to deny the protectors of the mountain the constitutionally guaranteed rights to assemble and petition grievances for a political act, which is what the state was doing in support of this astronomical project, the TMT. And
right.
So... since the state didn't, you know, goof up 1 or 2 or 3 times, but sort of broadly, repeatedly over duration, even to the point where Governor Ige was floating the idea of calling out the National Guard. My question is, when does misfeasance become malfeasance? And when are the individuals who clearly colluded to support an illegal project, when do they become personally, criminally liable for their actions to thwart the democratic process?
That is a great question, and I think that is another court case that we need to look forward into doing. The current ruling by the state Supreme Court specifically looks at that of the contested court case hearing. There's many more nuances that need to be resolved, but I guess for the moment is the bottom line is we got to have a contested hearing before anything can be done with the TMT. Now, the state says, the University of Hawaii says, we are reviewing the court's decision to figure out the best path to move forward. So the only path to move forward is to have your contested court hearing.
Right, because there are no permits for construction. There's no permission to even have, heavy equipment up on the mountain. And so I thought it was right and proper that since the TMT Corporation has no permits, no valid permits, they've been voided, why do they have heavy equipment on the island? Maybe they should take their stuff out of the place that they don't have any permits to be in.
Right. And, there is certain equipment up on the mountain already where they were doing some initial prep work, which is, again, illegal. And those machines are up on the mountain, and one of them has been leaking oil since April of 2015, and they have not fixed it. They have not taken down. These are questions that are beyond me why they have not been resolved. And says that they are improving their stewardship on the mountain.
They could do a heck of a lot to improve the stewardship that they have utterly failed to show.
Which is actually true too. If you look at the 1998 state auditor report, it pretty much says that, it's a big wake up call for the university, to properly manage the mountain. And so in response, they've done certain things like develop a ranger program so that, visitors could, be more safe, which is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. And, they could answer some questions for people about some of the cultural, natural, and scientific resources on the mountain. But aside from that, they really haven't done too much. They do some inventory of 250 cultural sites, but these are cultural sites that have been documented to be over 50 years old. So, the university is not acknowledging modern cultural sites. They are not acknowledging that culture is still evolving in Hawaii. It's almost like they're saying it's a stagnant thing. So, for example, if someone was to build a new ahu up on the mountain, that's no can unless you get a permit to get your permit to be legally practicing your cultural rights.
Well, that's a very good point, because the Hawaiians that I've spoken to, they feel they're still Hawaiians today. They don't think that the Hawaiian culture ended in 1778 and everything that's happened since then is somehow not Hawaiian. It's a very curious and kind of genocidal position to say, like, oh no, the Hawaiian culture that only existed 50 years ago or only 100 years ago, and you today cannot practice a living culture.
No, you cannot.
It exists only in the museums. It's all history.
Right. So I just want to share a little bit of my mana'o with that and what I've learned. And I do have to go on to do some other kuleana today. But I just wanted to share that with the community and all of us out there. And I I give my heart to everyone out there on the mountain and everyone who has their heart with everyone out there. And just mahalo, Jonathan, for all that you do. And just mahalo to all the listeners out there. And continue on the great journey that we do things. And I'll check in with you guys later, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate you calling in.
Aloha.
So it's a curiosity, but evidently we're boom reset, and I think we're back to 2011 or 2012, and everything that's happened in the last 3 years is all wiped clean. The TMT and the University of Hawaii has got to resubmit an application because there's nothing pending right now. That's the only way forward. But until such a time as those permits may or may not be granted, pending the contesting of their case, doesn't seem reasonable for heavy equipment to be parked up on top of the mountain. It's not a parking lot. It's not a construction site. It's a sacred mountain that rises up 34,000 feet from the bottom of the ocean. It's one of the most magnificent mountains in the solar system. There's only a few volcanoes on Venus and Mars that are larger and more massive or taller than Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa. And it's really quite gratifying to hear the Hawaii State Supreme Court confirm everything that the Hawaiian traditional and cultural practitioners have been saying since the very get-go, which is, hey, you know, science is great. Science is wonderful. Don't build things that you can't dismantle. Don't destroy an environment that you can't restore. And don't scour the heavens looking for life on other planets when you have a planet right here under your feet that you're trotting on life. It just doesn't make any sense. As a human being, as humanity, we can do better than that. And, you know, can you imagine how astronomers, how the astronomical community would react if they found life on the surface of another planet exactly like what's on the summit of Mauna Kea? It would be groundbreaking, wouldn't it? To the top of the hour here on Out of the Box, and listen to some music, come back with some station ID and business. Thanks so much for tuning in. Just like you, no matter what you say. so much for tuning in to Out of the Box on Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. This program is made possible by listeners just like you in partnership with these fine underwriters, Hawaii Life, the Tahiti Nui, and Compassionate Care.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
Mahalo indeed to Hawaii Life, to the Tahiti Nui, and to Compassionate Care. It's underwriters like you that help Kauai Community Radio not just survive, but thrive. And when you do underwrite on KKCR, you're helping move forward the mission of our radio station, which is to provide news and views that would otherwise go underreported or even unheard. We don't have to play music that the record companies want us to. We don't have to give you the news reports and the positions of the powers that be. It's our responsibility and commitment to bring voices to the air and music to your ears that you might otherwise never hear. That's the difference that we're trying to make, and that's the balance that we are committed to bringing to the airwaves here on Kauai. And thank you so much for your support. We could not do it without you. Out of the Box is a community affairs call-in talk show, and we're always interested to hear what is going on in your part of the island, what's happening in your community, and what views and how you react to the things that you're hearing on the station and what's going on in your world. So whatever you say, you're responsible for it. No one else has to agree with you, but we will respect your view, and we're happy to provide the platform for you to speak your mind and speak your heart.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That is right. So, what is going on for you? What is your story? What's happening recently for you here on the island that is different, that is new, that is exciting, or is perhaps a continuation of the wonderful and beautiful things that have been going on in your life for quite some time? The number here is 826-7771. The phone lines are open. We've got a caller calling in. Let me bring you up and put you on the air. The community airwaves, your airwaves, because you are the you in community. There you go. Aloha caller, you're on the air.
Aloha, thank you for this privilege. I'm so thrilled that Representative Gabbard has taken this position. It's, I think it's courageous, I think it's right, and I hope it's successful. I just want to say a couple of things about the telescope.
Sure.
You know, from the other side, I guess. For one thing, there's no better place on the planet to build a telescope.
I think that's true. I think everybody actually on all sides agree that there's virtually no place like that on this planet.
Yeah, and thank you. That's true, I think. And to me, just the wonder of exploring the universe was such a huge telescope. I mean, 30 meters is is a good size. And
it's not a good size. It's a colossal size. The dish, you know, for many Americans who maybe don't know what a meter is, 30 meters is almost 100 feet in diameter. The surface area of the primary mirror is 1.5 times the size of an NBA basketball court.
Well,
it's not your grandfather's telescope.
Okay. Well, I don't know how long a basketball court is. Do you know how long a basketball court is?
Yeah, it's like 96 feet.
96 feet.
Yeah.
So that's 30 meters. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, it's not as wide. So the area of a dish that's 100 feet in diameter, it's vast. It's the light gathering capacity for the proposed TMT is more than 3 times greater than the light gathering capacity of all of the telescopes that presently exist on Mauna Kea, some of which are the largest in the world.
Well, I didn't know that, and that's an impressive statistic. So, obviously there's going to be some impact on the mountain if it's built. I do think the process needs to go through to be approved if it happens, because when Linda Lingle tried to build the super ferry, she tried to ram that through, and we saw the consequences of that.
Yeah, when you don't follow the rules, you try and take shortcuts and just ram stuff through, like you say, the results are never good.
No, it was a complete disaster, and I think a ferry system could have worked, but not on the scale that she was proposing, and not in the way she went about it. It was a sell job from the start, and I really don't want to talk about it too much because it's too depressing. But
well, it's not so depressing because ultimately it was thwarted. So that's actually something that we can all feel very good about. And
well, that's true.
And KKCR, I think, played a very instrumental role in raising awareness and bringing attention and educating the people about just exactly what we were facing.
Well, it was a monstrous plan that was enacted, and four-story ramp down in the Wheelie. I mean, that was built. It was a farce.
Yeah, with taxpayer money.
Yeah,
that was $40 million of taxpayer money for a boat that never got the permits to run.
I know it was really. It's not depressing. Maybe it's a good thing it was defeated. So you're right. It was a victory in that sense.
Well, it's an interesting example because, I was in the water on my surfboard in the harbor blocking the boat from coming in along with 50 or 60 other people. We were ultimately successful in stopping that boat from coming into this harbor. But I'm not against boats. I think boats are great. And I'm not against, I wasn't against alternatives to transportation between the islands. We've seen what's happened since then with the airplanes and their monopoly on inter-island transport.
Yeah.
So, boats could be great. Ferries could be wonderful if they were perhaps just passenger ferries and they didn't go at 40 miles an hour through whale calving zones. So, the devil is in the details, and sometimes the details loom huge.
Well, that was a disaster from the get-go, and I believe in inter-island transport. It works in the Philippines, people, and they don't go 40 miles an hour. Maybe they go 4 miles an hour, that'd be about right. And that's, not... And give plenty of time for the fish to get,
Yeah, out of the way. You don't want them
just
slicing through the waves, that's slicing through all life that's in its path. It's crazy. I grew up in Seattle, and we have an extensive ferry system going back and forth across the Puget Sound. And there's dozens of ferries, and they're quite wonderful, but they don't go at 40 miles an hour. They don't carry 350 cars. They don't have 800 people. It's the sense of scale. It was just completely out of scale.
Yeah, that's so true.
So pivoting back to the TMT, it also is an incredibly large project. And, you know, I have said, and I'll say again, I love astronomy. I think astronomy is amazing. And some of the discoveries that have been made through technology are profound and have changed the way that people in the West, certainly, understand their place in the universe. But, you know, giant machines and big technology is not the only valid way to investigate the universe or to create a relationship with or understand how we fit into the big picture. You know, like an example I could cite is the Hadron Collider, the, you know, large super colliders where they're trying to investigate the very qualities and essence of matter itself with, you know, all kinds of subatomic particles and whatnot. Sure, you can have a $10 billion machine that explores these things, but machines only generate data. And data is not information. And information is not knowledge. And knowledge is not wisdom. You know, wisdom is more important than any of those things. And the most powerful tool that we can use to explore the universe is our mind and our imagination and our creativity. Albert Einstein changed physics fundamentally and cosmology fundamentally, and he just did it taking naps and riding his bicycle. So we don't always need a big machine to tell us what's going on in the world, especially if you just open your eyes and your ears.
That's true. You know, the Hadron Project, you know, they spent $10 billion to prove that what they thought it happened at the beginning of this universe, the Big Bang, happened, and they confirmed it happened the way that the scientists think. I don't know if that was worth $10 billion and all the hassle and, you know, environmental degradation that went on a scale that's much, much, much huger than this telescope.
Well, this telescope is, as you pointed out, it's 100 feet in diameter, and the dish is so large that it needs an 18-story facility to house it. I mean, you know.
Is that what they're saying?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's 180 stories, 180 feet tall, 18 stories above the ground, and then 2.5 stories down into the ground. So, going to actually, you know, blow up and detonate and excavate a big chunk of the mountain. And, you know, all things pass. You know, there's 13 observation facilities on the mountain right now. Two of them are already defunct. They never put their money in escrow. They don't have funding to debuild them and remediate the site. And you can't remediate a 25-foot hole in the ground on a 5-acre facility. It's not possible unless you can make lava. And only Pele can do that. So I don't know how the TMT Corporation proposes to restore their requested site to the existing condition. Do you follow me?
Well, there's no way they can hide a 12-story building. You know, if that's what it is, that's shocking to me. Because why do they need 12 stories?
It's actually 18, but yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, I mean, anything of, you know, more than 3 stories would to me be the maximum that I could foresee, you know.
Well, it's ironic because the 18-story skyscraper that they're proposing that they be allowed to build on top of the tallest peak on the planet at an elevation above 13,000 feet in the middle of a conservation zone is actually higher than any building that is presently permitted on the island of Hawaii in urban centers, any office building, any hotel. There's height maximum limits to how tall you can build a building, even in like downtown Hilo. And it's not 18 stories.
Yeah, it's maybe 5 stories or 7. Or
yeah,
something.
I think it's 4.
4, okay.
So, you know,
well,
so
I
what
had no
the
idea it was that big.
A lot of people don't know. I mean, because the telescope is so monstrously, gargantuanly more huge than anything that's ever been built on the planet. You know, people don't expect that. They go, oh, telescopes are great. I love telescopes. Astronomy is wonderful. But then, you know, that's not the same thing as proposing to build a $1.5 billion high-tech research facility in the center of a conservation zone.
Is that the tallest peak in Hawaii?
Well, interestingly enough, Mauna Kea is the tallest peak on the planet. Mount Everest is like 29,000 feet elevation, but it sits on top of the Tibetan Plateau. So Mauna Kea starts at the bottom of the ocean, 20,000 feet below the surface of the sea, and it continues from there 14,000 feet higher. So it's actually 34,000 feet tall. It's 10 kilometers high, and it's almost a mile taller than Mount Everest is when you measure them from the base to the peak. So it's really quite a flabbergasting and amazing and profound and sacred place. And everyone agrees. The astronomers...
I've never been to the Big Island, so I don't know. There's three peaks I know that are above 10,000 feet. I don't know which is the tallest.
Mauna Kea is almost 14,000. Mauna Loa is not quite as high, but it's a much more massive mountain. It's the most massive mountain on Earth.
Oh.
So it's pretty incredible, and it's amazing to look at from afar. I was just, when I flew back in from Seattle last week, I was able to, the air conditions were such that I could actually see the Big Island, and I could see Maui, I could see Haleakala, and I could see Oahu, and I could see Kauai. All at the same time. I've never seen that before, and it's amazing, these peaks that rise up so high, 20,000 feet higher than you think that they do because you can't see the bottom.
Right.
But it's amazing. The viewing conditions on top of Mauna Kea are some of the most profound and clear viewing conditions anywhere in the world.
Well, Hawaii is the most isolated place in the world.
It's so isolated. The skies are dark. The winds are smooth. The air masses are calm. You know, when you look through the atmosphere and you see the stars twinkle, that's because there's turbulence up above, and it's like looking through water in an aquarium. You see things kind of ripple. But the skies above Mauna Kea are, you're already above 40% of the atmosphere. So you're literally closer, and the seeing is more clear than anywhere else in the world. And so it's so, the visual distance between you and the heavens is so thin that you don't need a telescope to make a connection to the universe.
Yeah.
And that's why, that's my understanding of why environmentalists and Hawaiian cultural practitioners, they say, hey, you know what? It's a great telescope. Go build it on the Canary Islands. That's also in the northern hemisphere. The viewing conditions there are pretty good. They're not like here, but your technology will still give you good data. This place is so sacred that you can't improve it by building a $1.5 billion research facility on it.
And are they building on the very top of the mountain?
No, they're not. Do you know why?
Well, it would just be an eyesore, wouldn't it?
No, that's not why. There's plenty of structures up there already. The reason why they can't build it on top of Mauna Kea is because there's no room left on top of Mauna Kea. They literally have to go over the top, and they want the site that they were looking for, that their permits were revoked from, is on the northern flanks of the mountain, below the summit, over the top and beyond. The TMT Corporation has tried to explain that the reason why they're putting it over there is so that it won't be visible for most of the island, and it will be less disruptive of the natural view plane. But the reason they have it there is twofold. One, there's no room left on the top because there's already 13 facilities there, two of which are not functional and have not yet been dismantled and the site's remediated. But the main reason why they want it on the northern flanks of the mountain is because Hawaii, although it's equatorial, is on the northern hemisphere. And Hawaii is the premier location in the northern hemisphere to view the skies in the north. They already have similar mega telescopes that they're proposing to build in Chile, but they can't see the northern sky from there. So the reason they have it on the northern flanks is because that's where they want it, to give them an unobstructed view of the northern hemisphere. They pander to the public by suggesting, oh, we're trying to respond to your concerns about the viewplane. But, you know, where is the honesty?
Does it stick above the skyline when you look at it from below?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So when you're looking at the top of the mountain from down below, this sort of sticks, would stick out.
I think that they calculate that you could see the telescope, the 18-story skyscraper, you could see it from like 14 or 17% of the island. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but they're not putting it there to do anybody any favors. They're putting it there because that gives them the optimal viewing conditions that they want.
Yeah.
They just play it that way. And it's a shame because astronomy should be able to exist on its own virtues without, you know, pandering public relations.
Well, they're going to have to go through the, for the first time, the approval process. And they're certainly going to have to mitigate what they've got in mind to even have a chance of passing.
How do you mitigate restoration of the site to its present conditions that they don't have the ability to do? I mean,
I don't know. Did they own those sites, or does somebody else?
No, they don't own those sites. Those lands are held in trust presently by the state of Hawaii until the Hawaiian sovereign state by Hawaiian nationals can be restored.
Okay.
Even the state doesn't own it. It's a public trust held.
I got a cat fight here in my yard.
Well, that's kind of like the cat fight that's been on top of Mauna Kea.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, I really appreciate being able to discuss this with you, because a lot of people really don't understand what are the real issues here, and the powers that be don't have an interest in the real discussion taking place, because it might preclude them, it might bar them from doing what they want to do. And I don't blame them for doing what they want to do. That's what everybody wants. Everybody just wants to do what they want to do. And sometimes they don't care to follow the rules to do it. You know, if the rules are going to be an obstacle for them doing what they want to do.
Well, yeah, I suppose, you know, they saw them, you know, the money, the university, and certainly the construction workers. I mean, it was going to be over $1 billion. So, that's a lot of work, but
it's a lot of money. And, you know, and the state has an interest in facilitating that or greasing the wheels. I mean, the Ige administration has come out very strongly in favor and in support of the TMT's right to proceed, in spite of the fact that the Supreme Court finally has ruled that that never was the case.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, that's not right. And they're going to have to go through the approval process. That was a whole court decision, was it not?
Yeah, it was, but I think it's really important for people to understand that even though the TMT and the University of Hawaii were pursuing legally invalid objectives, you know, they did not have the proper permits to do, they were granted improperly. But it wasn't the law that stopped them. It was people literally putting their bodies in the way of the construction company and the contractors to go up there and begin construction. If people had not gathered on the mountain in hundreds to literally put their bodies in the way of the construction crews while this was all getting sorted out in court, the telescope would have been begun being constructed. So it's really, this is a terribly important thing, I think, for people to understand. There's the law, and then there's getting people to follow the law, and then what do you do in the meantime when they're not following the law?
Well, yeah, you know, those were some brave souls who went out there and did that, and, you know, even though I'm excited about the prospects of a telescope, but it has to be built in the right place and in the right fashion. And they just can't, you know, ramrod it through and down people's throats, you know. They have to go through the process, and if they have to make changes or put it somewhere else, well, then so be it, you know.
Yeah, I myself, like you, I look forward to the day when that telescope is constructed somewhere else and that they have first light and they begin getting observations. You know, the bigger the telescope, the better, because you gather more light and you can get more data and you have the ability to resolve things in a finer detail. That's wonderful, but unless we have compassion and wisdom and a respect for life and each other, you know, technology is an amoral thing. You know, the machines don't care if the laws are followed. The machines don't care if people respect one another. The machines don't care if life is crushed. They just want to get data. And that's terribly foolish.
Well, that's true. And I have to say, you know, I have a book. It's the biggest book I've seen. It's like 20 by, you know, 18 by 20 or something.
Are you talking inches or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Inches, and it's not thick, but it's the latest pictures of the universe from the Hubble telescope.
I think I might have that same book.
Yeah, and you know, it's awesome to read all these things about all the planets and the galaxies and you know, the whole universe. It's just awesome. I don't know how much more they can find. They've already, you know, located the you know, quasars at the edge of the universe, you know, 14 billion years ago. Still, you know, and the universe is expanding at an expanding rate. So,
yeah, which they don't understand why.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not Einstein, but, you know, it's exciting to see these other universes, but, you know, we're so fortunate to be where there's life, and even if there's life on other planets,
we're still never going to get there.
Yeah, we'll never get there, and if we don't really look at life on this planet first and, like, take care of these wars like Gabbard is doing, you know, what value is knowing the universe if we can't even get along with each other?
Well, you know, I think that's perhaps the simplest and most profound comment that I've heard about mega astronomy. We already have so much data that we can't make sense of. It doesn't make sense to, you know, generate more when we don't have the wisdom to understand it, especially when we have all these other problems. You know, what good is it to discover the universe if we lose this planet and lose our souls?
That's true. That's the bottom line right there.
So, yeah, I really appreciate having these kinds of discussions with people who, like me, who feel that astronomy is wonderful. But I asked some of the protectors, the Ku Kia I Mauna, the people who stood up for the mountain. I asked them, well, you know, why don't you think this telescope should be built? And Lana Kila Manguel, he said, well, you know, don't spend $1.5 billion looking for life on other planets. Take care of this one.
Yeah, we got homeless people in Honolulu and where else in these islands.
Yeah, I mean,
Jesus Christ, why don't we take care of those people?
Is it more important to build a house for a 100-meter telescope than it is to provide shelter and for people, you know, living people on this planet, you know?
And when we do that, then these other things really can wait, I think, you know.
And then I also talked to a Kupuna, an elder, Ku Ching. I said, well, how come you guys aren't as stoked as the astronomers are to, you know, to get this new gigantic cyclopean gargantuan telescope so they can learn more about the universe. And he said, well, you know, maybe they're interested in trying to figure out things that we already know. You know, I talked to a young astronomer, an astronomy student, and he was at the visitor center there at the 9,500 feet at Mauna Kea. And I said, well, what motivates you to look into the heavens? What are you after? What drives you? And he explained to me that because of all the astronomy that Western science has done, and mostly in the last 50 years or so, they have discovered that the molecules and the atoms in our body, like the iron in our blood, you know, the hemoglobin, those atoms were created in stars that went nova billions of years ago.
So that heavier elements.
Right, because all the Western science says all the heavy elements were not created in the Big Bang, and it's only through the nuclear fusion inside the core of stars that the heavier elements can be built up. And so he said, that's exciting to me. That helps me find meaning in my life. That helps me see the connection that we all have to the universe. And what Ku Ching was saying, the Kupuna is saying, is that, you know, the Hawaiian people 1,000 years ago, they didn't need gigantic telescopes to understand our relationship to the universe, because they already did. You know, they already knew that every part of life and every atom everywhere has a consciousness, and that we're all related, and that we're all ohana, and you don't need a machine to tell you that.
True. But they did love the heavens, too. I'm sure they really
did. They did, and they used their knowledge of their heavens, that they had it inside their heads and inside their hearts, and that they conveyed from generation to generation without machines. They took that knowledge, not the data, but the knowledge that they had of their lived experience, and they used it to cross the widest oceans on this world.
Yeah.
A 1,000 years before technological civilizations like the Europeans were able to, you know,
way before Columbus.
The European navigators were just crawling along the coasts. They were afraid to get out of the sight of land until they had a machine, you know, a chronograph, an accurate clock. The Europeans were terrified to sail into the open ocean until they had a device that would tell them where they were.
Yeah, they even thought they might fall off the edge of the earth.
So, you know, the West, it's kind of fascinating. The West, philosophically, they look at things discreetly and separated in isolation. You know, like you take a person and you chop them up into tiny pieces and you say, this is the liver and this is the spleen and these are the bones. And if you took these things and you ground them up and you divided them into their separate atomic elements, this is the iron and this is the calcium and this is the carbon. Well, after you have all that stuff labeled, all divided, all separated out, individual and discrete, that's not a person anymore. You know, that's not life.
Yeah. That's true.
That's not life. But the Hawaiian culture, rather than looking at individual, discrete things out of any kind of context, you know, I have come to understand that they look at the world in terms of relationships. You know, the relationship of one thing to another, not the thing by itself chopped up into tiny pieces, but as systems.
The big picture.
And so, you know, the Kukia I Mauna, the people who stood up and protect and are protecting the mountain, the sacredness of life here on this world, they don't need a machine to tell them that life is sacred and that we need to end our conflict and we need to come together and we need to recognize and honor each other and work in compassion to malama the life right here. We don't need to find life on another planet to finally confirm that the universe is alive. We already know. We are alive. The question that they asked, which I think is...
Yeah, it's already happening. Life is happening.
Yeah, and guess what? You are it. I am it. We are it. The one question that the astronomers who want to look through these telescopes billions of miles away and billions of years into the past, what the question that they don't have the answer to is, who are they right now and right here? And if you don't know who you are, it doesn't matter how much you know.
That's true.
So this whole thing with Mauna Kea and the 30-meter telescope, to me, I think it's so amazing and it's so rich and it's so enlightening, the educational opportunities that I personally experienced through trying to figure out, well, what is this conflict about? Why aren't they listening to each other? You know, astronomy is great, but maybe that's not the right place to build a telescope, even though the viewing conditions are so sublime. You know, data from the last 40 years from the other telescopes that have been built without permission from the Hawaiian people on the top of the most sacred mountain in their universe confirm that that's the best place on Earth to see, that the viewing conditions there are more clear and more connected than anywhere else. But the Hawaiian people knew that 1,000 years ago. They already knew 1,000 years ago that there was no place on Earth where you could get closer to the heavens than on the summit of Mauna Kea. And they didn't need gigantic telescopes to explain to them the connection that we have to the rest of the universe.
Yeah, that's true. We have a lot of work to do, you know, before we build another telescope. But, you know, it's up to the legal process, you know. There, you know, smarter people than me will figure this out. And thank you so much for your time and your insight. It's really been kind of changed my point of view, to tell you the truth, because I was in favor of this telescope. But when I find out more about it, it's a whole different kettle of fish. You know, it's a whole different thing. And you know, I can see that there's two sides to this issue, and it's changed my perception greatly. So I thank you for that.
Well, I thank you for listening to, you know, my perspective, and I really appreciate listening to yours. The phone lines are open right now for someone else who would like to call in and express your wisdom, your perspective, your mana'o, the way you understand the world. The phone lines here are 826-7771, and I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much for your comments. Really appreciate that. And the phone lines are open to someone else who'd like to call in. Listening to Out of the Box, I'm your co-host, Jonathan Jay. This is Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you, and you've got it tuned in right now to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, on 90.9 on the North Shore, 91.9 on most of the island of Kauai, 93.7 on the sort of the Anahola and Moloa'a pocket of the island, 104.7 on Oahu. We're blessed to have a transmitter over on the gathering place. And if you're there and you'd like to call in and comment, please do. The number is 826-7771, and the phone lines are open. We're going to go to this caller right here.
Hello?
Aloha, caller.
Yeah, Jonathan. Thank you. I'd like to bring your attention to something and ask a favor about a subject that I think a lot of people don't realize, and that's to not use the name ISIS to refer to a terrorist group.
This wow. That is. I think I know what you're talking about here. Please explain what you mean.
Yeah. ISIS is an Egyptian goddess. It's a goddess of love. It's a goddess of marriage. It's a goddess of wisdom. It's a protector of children. And to refer to this goddess as a terrorist group is very offensive to some. No different than referring to, you know, like calling it Pele or Lakshmi or Tara or Jehovah. Any of these names should not be used to signify a terrorist group.
I think it's amazingly, the irony is incredible that a goddess of love and wisdom and compassion is also the acronym for a terrorist group.
Yeah, this was a Western media concoction. It should be called ISIL.
Which if you don't know, stands for the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, which is the region, yeah?
Exactly. And that's what it should be called. And I even have a friend who named her daughter ISIS, and, you know, this is really offensive to call this beautiful child, you know, to use this child's name as a terrorist group. And other people, I find it offensive as well. I enjoy in the mythologies, and I enjoy all the representations of female goddesses, and ISIS is just another one. And, yeah, if people would stop using that, I'd appreciate that.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in and making that point. That's something that I had noticed, but I haven't heard anybody else talk about. And so I'm really, really glad that you called in and did.
Yeah, thank you. And I really enjoyed Tulsi. I voted for her, and it's nice to know that somebody you vote for is actually speaking out and speaking the truth for us. And her words of wisdom are, to me, very accurate. I also appreciate she's calling out CIA for what they are. I mean, they're the ones that have perpetuated wars and for decades. And, you know, they're behind this as well. And the administration is going along with it, and I'm really happy someone's speaking out, someone who's actually in Congress. I wonder if she's pretty alone in this, but it's at least nice to hear her.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same way, which is why I made an effort to reach out to her and bring her on to the airwaves here on Kauai. So
yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, and I'm going to call her and give her my, you know, kudos and...
Well, while you've got me thinking of it, I'm going to give out her number again for her office if folks want to follow up on that. And that is 808-541-1986. Again, that's 808-541-1986. I want to apologize to folks who've been holding for a long time. We've had some difficulties with the phones here, and I've been in the studio by myself trying to run the board and keep track of the conversation and bring people up on the phone. So please be patient, and I think we've got somebody else standing by.
Okay, thank you.
You're right. So phone lines are open, 826-7771. I will make an effort to answer them quickly and get as many people on before it's time to evolve with Dove coming up at 6. If you've never heard his show before, it's pretty amazing, and it's worth listening to very closely because even he doesn't know what he's going to play next. Thanks for holding. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Aloha, Jonathan.
Aloha.
It's Donovan Kabibi.
Hello, Mr. Kabibi. How are you on this day?
I'm doing great. Awesome show.
Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Yes. Thank you.
You're doing an awesome job on the radio today.
Well, you know, some people... thank you for saying that. I wish I could do even better by getting more voices on. It's been challenging here to run the phones.
I understand completely. I just wanted to encourage you with the job you're doing. Great, great, great job you're doing. It's a stellar program and worthy conversations. And I just wanted to ask if, because I didn't get to see or listen to Tulsi's segment earlier, but I know that this thing that she's gone through with, she had a co-sponsor with the bill, so she's not alone in that. And while I appreciate the work that she's done in that area, I'm curious to know if she was asked the question how she feels about this federal recognition process that the Hawaiian people are going through with, that was recently nullified by the Supreme Court, because it seems like she's avoided that topic before.
Yeah, I did not bring that up with her. We had so much to discuss about Syria and NATO conflict with Russia, and we didn't even talk about the Ukraine and NATO encroachment and the Crimea and the Black Sea. The Turks are not allowing Russian ships to go through international waters right now.
Right.
You know, it's really
Russia's just deployed a destroyer to go create conflict with those guys.
Yeah, it's a lot to try and pull together. And but you know, that's a great question, and I look forward to getting Representative Gabbard back on the show again in the future. There's so much to discuss.
Yeah, and then the other thing, you know, the caller previously was talking about the name of these Islamic state, and it's interesting that here in America and in the Western places, they're calling them the Islamic State of whatever, you know, ISIL and whatnot. But every time you hear one of the people in the region who are dealing with them directly, they're calling them Daesh.
Right, and I think that has to do with the Arabic term describing the location. In English, I think it's from a French term. They describe that as the Levant, which is sort of an arc that goes from Syria into the Tigris and Euphrates, that region. I mean, the states that exist there now were created by the French and the English and the aftermath of World War I when they carved up the former Ottoman Empire. So, you know, there never was such a place as Syria that has the boundaries now. If you look at the map closely, you can see there's all kinds of straight lines. And whenever there's a straight line on a map, you know it's a fiction.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I just wanted to encourage you and let you know you're doing a great job on the radio today. And the topics have been awesome. The people who have called in, great questions are asking, and I love the fact that you were able to make a convert today.
Well, I wasn't trying to convert anybody. I was just sharing.
Well, you know, the truth holds true no matter what, and when you speak the truth like you were, you can't help but to win people over to it. And you're the way you presented the facts was absolutely on point. And you know, my encouragement before I go, I just want to let everybody know, there's all this stuff that's going on in the world. Today's show was a classic example of that. We got wars happening all over the place. And essentially, in our daily lives, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, what write a congressman, vote, all of that stuff, pretty much null and void in the big picture. Doesn't have much effect. Only thing we can do is work on ourselves. And if we're moving Pono, doing Pono, then we don't have anything to worry about. And all that chaos that's happening around the world, you know, it'll be, but we will be Pono and right. And when we meet our maker, there will be no question about whose side we were on. And that's all that really matters, ultimately.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your views. That's what we strive to do here. We try to create a platform and make space for listeners like yourself to call in and share your mana'o. In speaking earlier with that previous caller, I wasn't trying to convert anybody to anything. I'm just trying to explain the world as I see it and learn from others. That's all.
Mike, got you.
Well, thanks so much. We're going to go to the next caller.
Perfect.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Are you there, caller?
Jonathan?
Yes, thanks so much for being patient and holding on. My apologies to not moving through the calls faster.
No problem. Mine is really quick, and it's really timely given everything you guys are talking about. Governor Ige and all of his cabinet will be making their community visit to Kauai on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. in the Performing Arts Center at Kauai Community College.
So thank you so much for calling in with that very important information. And I want to get you to repeat it. It's Tuesday night, and it's at 6:30 p.m. What day of the what's the date for that?
Oh, whatever Tuesday is, 13th, 14th, 15th. It's December the 15th. It's at Kauai Community College at the Performing Arts Center. And this is when Governor Ige and all of his cabinet go out and go to the community, and they're supposed to answer there will be a question and answer period, and each one of the cabinet members will, you know, present their program as they see how it relates to Kauai. So this is a really good chance to bring some questions to the table. And the other thing I was going to tell you earlier is at 6 o'clock, starting just in a few minutes, next door to KCL restaurant, there is a talk being given by Molly Luskavage on the Ahi and Striped Marlin tagging program.
Oh, okay. What's that?
That says, well, I'm going in to find out.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. And perhaps you can call in to one of the next shows on Tuesday next week and explain what it is that happened. Appreciate that. Thank you so much for alerting our listener about the Governor Ige coming to KCC next Tuesday on the 15th.
Okay. Thanks. Mahalo. I got to go now.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, caller. So yeah, the governor coming to Kauai, a chance for you to give him and his administration and some of his department leaders your perspective on what they are doing that you approve of, what they're not doing that you wish they were, and what they are doing that you have an issue with. These kinds of events are essential to the correct and smooth operating of our society. You know, if we are going to, you know, call ourselves a democracy, and if the leaders that we elect to represent us, if we don't communicate with them and tell them what they should be representing, then they're never going to get it right. 6:30 Tuesday on December 15th next week at KCC, Governor Ige and some of his department heads will be there. It's a great opportunity to go and listen to what they think that they're doing and for them to hear from you what you think they should be doing. Similarly, on Saturday the 12th, the Wailua and Kapa'a Neighborhood Association is having a talk story session with Mayor Bernard Carvalho. And some of his department heads will be there. It's in the afternoon. I'm not sure the time. Perhaps an Akamai listener can call in and let us all know. But that's going to be at the Kapa'a Library. I'm going to go to that. I think it should be pretty interesting. I would love to hear what the mayor is wanting to focus on, what he feels his priorities are, and to see what people in the community want to bring to his attention. One thing that I've noticed recently that I'm very excited about is new bicycle lanes and new striping on the roads, creating bicycle lanes and signage for bicycles. I have a bicycle, and I love riding it. It's blue, and it's got, like, 27 speeds. You know, I don't even think that I could imagine such a thing when I was a little kid. Like, oh, I wonder what bicycles would be like when I grow up. But biking on Kauai is, could be a paradise, except it's crazy dangerous because the roads are not built with cyclists in mind. So these new steps that the county seems to be taking in support of giving people an alternative to moving around in their cars is really wonderful, and I would love to congratulate who in the county is responsible, because things don't just happen by themselves. Someone takes an action, and that's how it happens. And maybe that person is you, so thank you so much for that. Also on December 13th, Sunday, there's going to be another meeting at the Kapa'a Library, and these are groups of Hawaiian nationals who are responding to the next steps at moving beyond the Na'i Aupuni, the effort to seize the government, the unconstitutional effort that was just halted by the court for trying to conduct race-based elections with state money. The Hawaiian kingdom was never a racially based government or society. Back in the 1800s and the 1840s and 1850s, you could be from France, you could be from Germany, you could be from Portugal, you could be from Africa. And if you came to the Hawaiian kingdom and, you know, pledged your loyalty to the to the Hawaiian Constitution and the constitutional monarchy, you could conduct business. You could buy and sell land. You could vote. In the Hawaiian Kingdom, they had the franchise. Voting was extended to people of every color. It didn't matter. And, you know, this is at the same time in the U.S. when they had slaves. So the Hawaiian Kingdom was very progressive, very, very early on, kind of showing a lot of leadership to other nations in the world whose constitutions were a little more backward, like the U.S. that allowed people to be slaves, and was never a racially based citizenry. Your citizenship wasn't based on whether you're Hawaiian or not. It's whether you understood and supported the Hawaiian constitutional monarchy. So we've got another caller here. Bringing him up right now. Thanks so much for standing by. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Great. Yeah. No, I'm glad to be here. Great show. I'm loving it. Hey, I was just kind of wondering, is there some liability on the part of the state of Hawaii for going ahead and doing these projects up on Mauna Kea and have them be ultimately illegal the way they've proceeded so far in doing it? Is there a civil court that can be some monetary return brought back to the Hawaiian people out of this?
Well, I think that's a great question. I would love to see that because, you know, the state didn't do just one or two or three things consistent with a illegal process. They conducted themselves vigorously in support of the illegal process. You know, Governor Ige tried to create an exclusion zone with emergency measures to deny people the right to assemble and petition the government and deny Native Hawaiians the right to practice their cultural traditions and beliefs. And so it was a very consistent and concerted effort in conjunction with the TMT Corporation to grease the skids and jam this thing through the process illegally. And so that didn't happen randomly or by accident. Real people made real choices consistent with that. And I think the question of whether there's criminal liability for that is an excellent question. And if the answer is yes, then people in the future, if there's consequences for their actions, people won't do stuff like that in the future.
Exactly. That's my point. If they get away with it, okay, we'll just try it again. You know, we'll just keep doing it. And they have been doing using this manner in a number of different ways. Niaupuni is a good example, and the mountain is another one. Super Ferry was another one, real good one. And there's no consequence for it. They're just going to keep continuing this as the game plan. We'll just push it with our state officials to get it through, and hopefully nobody will say nothing about
it. Yeah, well, if there's no consequence, why wouldn't they just keep doing it?
Well, right. It'd make it legal. I mean, if you don't get any kind of blowback from what you're doing, essentially, it's legal. Like, if they got the thing started up there, I don't know if anybody would have...
Well, it's too late to stop something after it's already started.
Exactly. So that's an interesting question. But then again, you know, what is it going to be? Is it going to be the suing the state, the Hawaiians who sue the state of Hawaii court?
It's not just the Hawaiians. I'm a citizen of the state of Hawaii, and I find it outrageous that the laws are being circumvented in an effort to criminally collude to push projects through an illegal process. You know, you don't have to be a Hawaiian to be outraged at that.
Yeah, hopefully this will open a lot of eyes, like the one of the last callers who was starting to think a little bit deeper about what was going on up there, how they've done it, gone about doing it. And hopefully it'll open up a lot of other people's eyes that, oh, yeah, geez, we've been really treating the Hawaiians, you know, poorly in this. I think also the Supreme Court said that the Hawaiian people they've been holding funds back from the Hawaiian people that should have been issued to them.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous. Once you scratch the surface and get beneath the sound bites and the public relations efforts of the illegality of the state. I mean, there's no treaty of annexation between the U.S. and the Hawaiian Kingdom. It doesn't exist.
Exactly. Exactly.
It never happened. So the entire overthrow and the acquisition of the U.S. is completely illegal. And it's no different from what the Germans did when they wanted to attack France and just invaded Holland and Belgium.
As a matter of fact, this whole thing with Super Ferry, Nile Puni, Mauna Kea is a perpetuation of what they did in stealing the Hawaiian Islands initially.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't like to have that accusation thrown in their face. But, you know, sometimes the truth stings. And if it's wrong, don't argue about it. Just stop doing it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because a lot of people say, oh, you can't stop this project, you can't stop that project, because Hawaii will get the reputation for being a bad place to do business. My take on that, if Hawaii has the reputation for being a bad place to do bad business, that's great. So, but in the spirit of increasing your access to information and knowledge, we're going to bring the show to a close and play the county council report, because these are people that we have elected and are working in our name to do things and take care of stuff that needs to be done here on Kauai. And if you don't know what they're doing, what are they doing? So we're happy at KKCR to provide updates and reports about what goes on in your local council. And I want to thank John Gordon for his efforts for years now, consistently doing this week after week. So I'm going to say aloha, aloha, aloha to you. And we're going to go out with the county council report following with Dove and Evolve. Hey, Dove, do you know what you're going to do today? Oh.
John Trudell.
Oh, I love John Trudell.
Yeah, he passed away on Tuesday.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, passed away.
Wow. Well, yeah. big ups and respect to him. Wow, John Trudell. Wow, he's a visionary and so fierce, too. You're going to play some of his poetry?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That'll be a show to tune into. Hey, you're not going to hear this kind of stuff anywhere else on the FM dial except for here. And Kauai Community Radio. It's an honor and a privilege to serve you. And I stick around because there's more fantastic radio coming up. Aloha.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of December 7th. There will be a council committee meeting on Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights in the agenda. The Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has a request from Council Chair Raposo for the Director of Parks and Recreation, County Engineer, and the Planning Director to provide a briefing on the work performed adjacent to the Kealahele Makalai Multi-Use Path and Kuna Bay. The Budget and Finance Committee has four bills on their agenda. They are Bill 2602 for an ordinance amending an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1 through June 30th by revising the amounts estimated in the Criminal Assets Forfeiture Fund. This is for the Kauai Police Department KPAL Youth Center Interim KPD Training Facility in the amount of $300,000, and this is the operating budget. And it's related to Bill 2603, also amending an ordinance to the capital budget of the County of Kauai, and for the same fiscal year, July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising this amounts estimated in the general fund CIP, again for the same amount. Public hearing was held on these bills on December 2nd. Also on their agenda is Bill 2605 for an ordinance amending an ordinance relating to the capital budget for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the Development Fund, CIP, and this is for the Coco Palms Development Use Permit Conditions, $110,000. Public hearing held on this one on December 2nd. And finally, Bill 2606, a bill for an ordinance amending the county code, adding a new section 5A93 relating to a homestead tax cap for home exemption and long-term affordable rental properties. Also held a public hearing on this on December 2nd. The Committee of the Whole has a request from Council Chair Raposo from the Mayor to provide a briefing regarding the administration's plans to establish a general excise tax and use tax surcharge for the County of Kauai. The briefing shall include the following: a list of proposed projects the administration has identified that are eligible to be funded with this appropriation, and the timeline for each project, the cost associated with each project. Clarify whether the administration intends agency utilize the monies derived from the tax surcharge to reimburse the county's general fund for the amount of subsidies appropriated for each project. Address whether an increase in the general excise and use tax surcharge can be achieved incrementally or whether the Hawaii revised statutes mandates the increase to occur all at once, and identify what elements are required for the county to implement this general use tax surcharge, and finally include the deadline date by which to accomplish each task. Councilmember Vichok requests agenda time to allow David Mora, state liaison for the International City County Management Association, to give a presentation on the overview of the council manager system of government, best practices, costs and benefits, and suggestions on a transition to a council manager system for the County of Kauai. The committee also has on their agenda Bill 2604 for an ordinance to establish new article in the Kauai County Code as amended relating to barking dog nuisance. Public hearing was held on this on December 2, 2015. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai.gov/webcastmeetings. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.